There we go.
Hi, everybody. It is Thursday, so Trekker's Delight is coming at you with two, not just one, but two episodes today. We are going to cover the final episode of Lower Decks current season, and then we're going to move into the first episode of Star Trek Prodigy, which is super exciting. I have with me William Wofford, Keith Shevlin, and Jermaine Watson. Been a hot minute, my boy. Been a hot minute.
It is.
I know. Thrilled to get to do this with you. I have missed you, man. All right. So I'm feeling beautiful being footage. How about you guys?
Roll it.
Awesome. And everybody gets to make fun of me for chair dancing because I do that every time. And it's fine. It's fine. I love it. Like Jermaine's got rhythm and he's just doing his thing. And I'm over here like, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm living down to the stereotype, guys. I am. All right. So for the top of the hour, I think we are going to start with Lower Decks. Let's finish up old business and then move into new. So Keith, are you ready to do a summary for that one?
Sure. So, hold on.
So nice when I don't have to do it. as I sit here in my old lady sweater. Y'all know it's turning into fall, which means, you know, I'm going to die. I don't do cold. I don't.
Oh, you sound like me.
I don't do cold. I mean, I've even got my feet in an old lady leg foot warmer under here.
No. Is the heater on too?
No.
Okay. This week's episode, the final episode of season 3, The Stars at Night. We pick up where we left off last week, where the Cerritos has been shown up by the Aledo of the brand new Texas class, NA-01. They have returned to Earth in order to get repairs after the thorough beating they got from the Breen, and Captain Freeman is left to stand in place of defense of the entire California class, not just the Cerritos, in which Starfleet decides that instead of having a manned cruise of the California class, to go with the automated Texas class by the recommendation of Admiral Brain Omega, who is not our good friend. Despite his name.
Of course.
Yeah, so then we had...
It's a very tongue-in-cheek reference.
Yes, indeed. So then, of course, Freeman asks that information not be shared with her crew until she is ready to share it. And, of course, it already got back to the ship before she even got back on board. Mm. And which you have Tendi and Boimler, of course, both being upset that their perceived career possibilities are being taken away, while Rutherford is strangely in love with the Texas class and its beautiful design, engineering, and its very interesting code. That's the sound of foreshadowing.
It was not subtle.
Yes.
It was not. In true Lower Decks fashion.
True.
They're like, look here. This is why we did that episode earlier, guys.
So, it was a good tie-in. It was a very good tie-in.
So as a last-ditch attempt to save the Cali class, Freeman challenges the Aledo to a second contact at Chase Race. Or whatever. To which, of course, Ramson mothers a what? To which, well, I made it up on the way, on the fly. So they have three missions. They have to race the Aledo at to try to prove that the California class is better at second contact. So first, you have the return to Gallardon from the very first episode of Lower Decks, in which they are delivering some new power plants, some new supplies, but trying to do it as quickly as possible while the Aledo shows up and just beams the stuff down and then is off to its next thing, which is the apparently lifeless planet LT-358. While the Cerritos gets there first and starts building a scientific observation point, Tendi finds the possibility of microscopic life, which causes them to stop. Meanwhile, the Aledo shows up, beams down a fully built scientific station, and then off it goes to the next one. That last planet being Achmonic 3, a Brigadoon-style planet that disappears and only shows up for a couple hours every few years. And the Aledo gets there just in time to deliver its supplies, and then the Cerrito shows up just in time to see the planet disappear once again. So being defeated, they limp back to Douglas Station. The Texas class is triumphant. All California class is about to be decommissioned, until the key point of the fact that Tendi did that extra scan. Did the Aledo do that extra scan of possible life on LT-358? To which Freeman then uses that as a charge that the ship isn't ready. And in a back and forth with Gwen Amiga, he's continuing to claim that he is one. And that's when Rutherford reaches his eureka moment, that the code is actually the code that he wrote prior to his accident. Gwen Amiga is that shadowy Starfleet figure that had the implant installed. And the code is very similar to the very code that powers Badgie, the murderous AI badge powered by Jack McBrayer from season one. So now, Gwen Amiga decides to try to do away with the Cerritos and try to claim that the Cerritos attacked the Aledo out of jealousy, and turns on, allows the Aledo to become self-aware and independent. At which point, its true Badgie self comes out and immediately turns and kills Buen Amiga.
I will burn your heart in a fire.
Yes. Then launches its two friends, Dallas and Corpus Christi, to then lay waste to Douglas Station.
While they're taking all the bad towns out of Texas.
To which the Cerritos is the one ship that is able to fight back until the Sovereign class Van Sitters shows up. But still isn't enough. So Freeman then broadcasts to the ships that, hey, we have your creator on board, and he knows how to shut you down. To which all three ships then chase after the Cerritos. And in his dream of dreams, Shax finally gets to expel the warp core in order to blow up these three automated ships.
And I love like the honor guard that he had.
It's a true beautiful. It's like cool. Officer and a gentleman. They're all applauding. This is beautiful.
It was more moving than Neelix's departure on Voyager.
Oh, by far. But unfortunately, it only blew up the Dallas and the Corpus Christi, leaving the Aledo to come onward. But just in time, Mariner shows up with her friend, I keep forgetting her, Aberdeen?
Yes, Petra Aberdeen.
Petra Aberdeen. And not only them, but every other California-class ship. That's right. It's the Oakland with Captain Ramsey. It's the Alhambra with the crew that look vaguely like the Cerritos crew, but not exactly. It's the Merced with the Tellarite captain. It's the Englewood with Vendon,
Did anybody else notice that the Tellarite captain was definitely doing the Captain Morgan stance?
Oh, yes, he was.
I saw that.
And he was on the Merced, which I thought was destroyed during the episode from season one, but it's bad. But 23 California class ships in all show up, remaining members after the two that were destroyed in season one. And they are able to fight back against the Aledo and destroy it. And then there's a party on the Cerritos, as it should be. Mariner returns home. And we've got a new friend, the long-awaited and teased and held out to the very, very, very last minute. Tell him from Wes Duge last season, joining the crew of the Cerritos. As Tendy's
perhaps I could time. Find more somewhere more private to discuss my orientation. Nah, dog. No.
Please do the voice of a Vulcan one day, Marie. Just please.
It would be more logical to find a quieter place so that I may fully digest the information.
I don't have my water today, y'all.
You came unprepared.
I did.
Unprepared. All right. So let's talk Lower Decks, because this was an interesting way to end the series, in the season.
Not, for once, not a cliffhanger.
I know.
There's no cliffhanger. I mean, they kind of...
Did you get the sense that they weren't sure they were coming back?
It sounds like it. Mm-hmm. No, it completely sounds like it.
But they were, when they were confirmed for season three, they were confirmed for two seasons, three and four, at the same time.
Right, which means
that... Yeah, but maybe they didn't write far enough?
I don't see any indication of Lower Decks being canceled.
Yeah, definitely not. No, they've already said season four is in production right now. But
right, so what's going to be the big bad guy? And because here's the thing, we wrapped up this. That Marie said something before we aired today. They actually wrapped up the story.
Yeah,
they wrapped it up. It's finished. It's finished.
Or maybe they're creating another three season arc.
Right. Right. And and that's good. You know, I guess I just wanted something to look forward to, you know, because we kind of don't
Len, clearly
anything at this
point. We're going to get Tendy versus Vulcan, y'all. Like, this is going to be amazing.
No, we still got William Boimler, now part of Section 31.
I mean, yeah.
We still got hints of other things that are still out there. Peanut Hamper is still out there. Now best friends with Agamus. There's the possibility of more. It's just the major things we thought we were going to continue on all got wrapped up pretty nicely.
So basically, the crew is back together. The mystery with Weatherford has been solved. What's the Bajoran's name? The one that
cracks
Shax. He finally gets respected. Tindy gets approved somehow. I don't know what the hell that was about.
Mariner does. I mean, Mariner finds her way and decides that she's going. That she likes Starfleet, and we finally get some success at at justifying the existence of the California class.
Right. We learn about all the other California classes, because it's like when your entire class is at jeopardy. Then, yeah, I can imagine them being in close range with each other because they were probably recalled to the starbase in the first place to be decommissioned, and they were probably on their way. So I can see how
seems like a tremendous waste of resources.
That's the point that Freeman was trying to make. Like, it's just...
It was just weird to me. It was just weird to me. But, you know, I gotta say, this felt like Lower Decks Into Darkness.
So, can you flesh out the darkness part?
So, we have, drone warfare in the sense that, you know, like, the Vengeance was mostly unmanned and was meant to be designed to be unmanned. So, that's the Aleda, right? We also had one of the major crew go off and become a civilian. That was Scotty and Into Darkness, and now it's Mariner. We also had the very beginning, right, where they're... Oh no, that was something else. Sorry, well, I'm jumping ahead. I'm jumping ahead to Prodigy, guys. I'm jumping ahead to Prodigy with the water.
I definitely thought that on Prodigy, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, but I really feel like this one had a lot more to do with it, because there was a lot of discussion. There was a lot of discussion about what Omega wanted that kind of mirrored Peter Weller's character.
And the way he killed was very similar to how Harrison shot at the Admirals and Into Darkness. Yes.
Yes. and, you know, everything sort of turns on itself, which was, you know, part of the thematic structure of Into Darkness, which is, I have to admit, my least favorite Star Trek movie. Like, it's the Star Trek movie I cannot make myself watch again.
Into Darkness?
Yeah, I can't do it.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You, Marie and I, we love each other, but we disagree on this. Into Darkness is actually, of the three, Into Darkness is actually my favorite, and Beyond is the worst one for me.
So, now that the adults can speak.
I'm the exact opposite. Beyond is my favorite of the three, and Into Darkness is the worst.
There you go.
Well, he found something to drink.
I would like to point out that Into Darkness, the uniforms they had. In Into Darkness, the uniforms they had had epaulets, and no other uniforms in Star Trek have epaulets, except the ones that Buenamiga tried to push onto Freeman with four, not just the two, four epaulets.
Yes. And the whole business of like trying to show that it wasn't like it was going to be a setup, like the whole setup business was something that they pulled from Into Darkness as well.
We knew it was a setup in the last episode.
We did, and I thought of you actually. I was like, William's going to be so excited. But
it's even more of a setup than we thought. We knew the Breen was a setup. We didn't realize that her getting the Caraman on Deep Space Nine dumped on her.
I didn't know about the Deep Space Nine thing. Like, now I was like,
whoa, I mean, it seemed a little fancy for her, but
right.
You know, but yeah, no, that was cool. That was okay. A thing. So I really sort of think that was a whole situation. Also, the concept of drone warfare comes up thematically in Into Darkness. They don't handle it well because it's a crappy movie.
Yep.
Lower Decks does it better.
Yep.
I'm not going to deny that Lower Decks did it better, because they did.
So I actually thought that was an interesting way to end the season, right? To pick that particular movie, because there's no way that was not purposeful. There's no way.
There was definitely, I mean, Lower Decks prides itself on not taking but borrowing other Trek moments from other Trek films and shows. So that being said, Keith, what would you say would be not just the literal Easter eggs, but as far as like entire moments, kind of like what Marie described with Into Darkness, that you feel like are Easter eggs or nods to past moments in Trek?
Well, first of all, for tonight's episode, I actually wrote all the Easter eggs down.
I love you, Keith. I do.
Because there was just
you make so my many nerd heart swell sure. Two sizes.
I have to say the moment that really got me was when you had all the Cali class show up and to try to take down the Alito. I was thinking of Undiscovered Country with the
Star Trek Online,
Discovery, the end of season two, when you had the Enterprise and the Discovery versus the Section 31 ships.
Mm-hmm.
There are frequent references to when but here having the whole fleet come together to fight this. It was this great, proud moment.
We're Gadoon Planet. We've seen that before. We saw that in Deep Space Nine with Jadzia.
Yep. Oh, and it also showed up in a later episode of Voyager. And then, of course, the Orville also had it as well.
Yeah, they did.
In fact, I think the Orville did it better than Deep Space Nine did it.
I'm going to have to make you stop now.
You're next, Keith.
No, I'm just saying. Hey,
I was waiting.
Marvel.
Nope. You just keep going. He's just wrong.
I love friends from high school who was thrown out of the airlock of the Orville with frozen face. So.
Keith's face was like, really?
Love you, Marie.
I love you, too. Y'all knew I was petty. Y'all knew. Y'all knew. But in all fairness, I do agree with you. There are some moments that the Orville does better. There are very few, and I have to drink a lot to get to that admission. So,
so what do you have in that cup?
Angel's Envy.
Gotcha.
Okay. I will say... that what I really did appreciate, I won't say it's my favorite part, but what I appreciated the most was that as much as the Cerritos gets his ass kicked every single season, it was nice seeing the other Cali classes come together on their own. Like, you don't need a... And we saw that Sovereign Cat class get its ass whooped. Yep. Like, we saw it, you know? And before the Gen Hate didn't exist yet. So it was just the Sovereign class. Like I said, and not just the Sovereign class, and obviously Enterprise F didn't exist yet either, because that's like 20 later. But they came together and did it on their own. They didn't need the big boys for help. And when they did come for help, they got their butts whooped. That's what I'm saying. So it felt really nice, because what Mariner did was a classic Kirk move. Calling every, like, it totally reminded me of that moment where, now at that point, Kirk was bluffing, but Mariner wasn't.
This was a very Strange New Worlds Kirk move.
This is Strange New World.
Yeah. Kirk. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. But yeah, but Mariner wasn't bluffing.
Nope.
Yeah, that's just,
I called all of them and they showed up.
All of them? Like, totally Avengers Endgame. Like,
right.
Is that all of them? What, you want more?
It was a nice way to use the street cred, if you will, that she had garnered from being on the Cerritos, to get all of them to react and act on their behalf.
I was quite convinced that the Cerritos was going to get destroyed this time, and that was going to be our season 4. Like, something was going to happen. They were going to fall into that vanishing plant. Something was going to happen. But no, they just lost to another nacelle again. You know, like for the third time. So
now, I really very strongly feel like part of the series Bible involves like a Simpson-esque reset. Like, you can't have a permanent change that's going to last forever.
Right.
True. Like, yeah, even Shaq's dying. No.
Yeah, no. He comes back to life.
I love how emotional Shaq gets. Because it really added to it. And you can tell that he's been asking. I don't know how many. I'm sure someone will go back and count eventually. But I'm sure he's probably asked multiple times since season 1 to eject the warp core. Like,
right.
Which is right. Also, it's not a, it's like a Tuvok combined with the Riker move. You know, remember the Tuvok move where they launched the torpedo at the Badians and they exploded? And then Riker in Insurrection, please don't talk bad about it. In Insurrection, they ejected the warp core. I didn't know they had that many warp cores, to be honest. But ejected the warp core at the stretch head people. Like, they look like that. But I
think they're called the Sona.
Yeah. Basically them.
It's, but that's like, also a movie I don't rewatch.
They treated because
I don't hate my life.
How they treated them like Planet of the Apes, where they got those people down on the planet and the rest of them are in space, and they look totally different because they evolved different ways. Like, they look so,
I feel like you watched a different Planet of the Apes than I did.
I mean, because in the original Planet of the Apes, like the third or fourth movie, the underground people, they all look pasty white. And it was just not
good. The second movie.
Thank you. So
it needs a Planet of the Apes. Yes.
Yep. Or Time Machine. Same thing. You know, they look like a giant gorillas on the top, and then they look like blue white people and under the ground. Or was it?
Yeah, but that's because H.G. Wells was a flaming racist.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
racist with concept. I like how Jermaine is just like, where are they going with this?
Jermaine's like, I'm gonna get my water now.
Man's water, no!
Oh, no, that's Crown, baby. Woo! Yes.
He came prepared this time.
He's drinking from the bottle, man. Like, I have driven Jermaine to drink from the bottle. Toast to that, my dude.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, Lord have mercy. Yeah,
Keith, keep us going, please.
You have to be the grown up.
Y'all getting on to me for liking me some white meat. Now I hear y'all
watching. I'm just sitting here drinking my non-alcoholic beverage.
I like that he has to specify.
Yeah, it's a rum and coke.
So, yeah.
Rum and coke. I got you.
Minus the rum.
Favorite scenes before we move on to Prodigy.
I think we have a couple more things that I think we can cover.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Lower Decks, because like we haven't touched on Boimler yet, and you know,
ooh, he stood up to the captain.
He stands up to the captain.
Yeah,
he basically does everything he's never, like, we get bold Boimler, but in a good way, in a yeah, positive way.
Which is interesting because we had just a few minutes before he regressed, and they even called him out on regress.
I caught that.
Yeah.
When Shaq caught him making fun of him, he immediately was right back to Boimler from season one, trying to get a bridge buddy and everything.
I don't know. I don't think it was that. I think he was genuinely bothered that he'd hurt Shax's feelings.
Who was he? Boimler never, if you think about it.
Like, Boimler's not an ass.
Boimler never hurts anyone's feelings other than Mariners. Like, from time to time for different bullshit reasons.
And then he never quite believes that Mariner's feelings are getting hurt because she spent her entire life cultivating that persona.
Right. So if you think about it, since the first time we met Boimler, this is the first time we've seen him hurt someone's feelings.
Right. And Shax, of course, took it in the exact wrong way, right? Because there was nothing about what Boimler was doing that wasn't affectionate. But like, Shax didn't hear any of that.
Right.
Also, I really loved how Mariner, like when Mariner's talking to her mother, she's like, "Well, I've only spent my whole life trying to convince you."
You know what? Like, that's actually something I wanted to acknowledge you on. Because you said it last week. We didn't exactly disagree or disagree on the matter, but last week we talked about how I felt like the crew should be held more accountable for the things that they said. Mm-hmm. And you were saying that, be that as it may, Mariner kind of dug her own grave on this one.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually admitted it, saying, I spent my entire career making sure you wouldn't trust me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I liked that. I liked that acknowledgement. And I feel like it solidified the relationship even more. It's character development. It's character development. I don't know where we're going with this, but from what I've seen, I feel that Lower Decks, even though it's like a nod to all the other Trek so far, and I haven't, Prodigy's brand new, so I'm not counting that. Has the best character development, in my opinion.
Lower Decks has had some pretty consistent character arcs, and they've had a real... I mean, I'm not going to say that the other shows haven't had a real vision for where they wanted the characters to go, but I think Lower Decks has done a better job of implementing that vision Keith?
No, I was going to say, the fact that they did it in three seasons... where almost every other Star Trek show has taken three seasons just to get up and going.
To start.
Just to start, yeah.
Cheers.
Think of how little of a character we had of Nog in the first three seasons of Deep Space Nine, but then when we got him fully formed, it was off to the races and spectacular.
Agree.
And we point to Deep Space Nine as being one of the strongest series in terms of character arcs and character development, because it had to be.
Right.
Because it wasn't, it wasn't going to be an Alien of the Week type situation. I think that's huge. And one of the things I've said is, overall, there have been some slow ones. There have been some ones that didn't quite rub me the right way. Words.
The right way.
The white way?
Yeah.
No, it was Keith who said that.
I do believe I've had a dose of my own medicine, y'all.
Oh my god. Now, anyway.
I figured I'm the one who can get away with saying that.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, to be fair, I have been listening to my 4-year-old, and we cannot, like, there are no R's, they're hurting. I mean, everything's kind of like a wuh sound.
Sure.
Yeah, like, mom, get in wine. And I'm like, that's a thing.
Put the H before the W yet?
Yeah.
Like, what?
No.
Anyway, I will say, but back to the character development, the whole arc thing. It's like, we're in season 4 of Discovery, and I still don't know the Asian guy's name.
I think that's because you have a personal block.
I don't know him. I don't know anything about him.
I know his name.
About Owoshkin than I know about the Asian dude.
Yeah, because Owoshkin was literally used as a deus ex machina. Like, I mean, she was a MacGuffin. Like, if you needed somebody to be able to do something, you picked Owo.
Yeah. Right.
She was a pearl diver. She was apparently a prize fighter. And I'm like, at some point you went to Starfleet Academy, right?
right? At some point. I don't know nothing about the dude who looks like Brian McKnight that got written out of season four for no reason. I don't know nothing about the android that supposedly that died. I didn't even know she was important until she died.
Yes, and that's something we actually covered when we ranted about that episode, because there was absolutely no
I don't know anything about you. Why should I care that you're dead or deactivated or frozen? I don't know how. I don't even know how she died. Like,
you get sucked into space.
Stop. You so silly.
I don't know them. I don't know them. As far as, like, I'm going to be honest with you. If I were to rank character development and I won't say story arc because Discovery is getting there. But character development, I would place Lower Decks is number one, Prodigy is number two, Picard number three, and Discovery is number four.
Of new Trek, right?
Of new Trek, correct. Since Discovery, that's as being premiered. Hold on. Of new Trek, shit.
Oh,
okay. Let me put Strange New Worlds.
Strange
as
New
number
Worlds. Yeah,
I'm putting Strange New Worlds as number two.
Okay,
number two. That's okay,
because we had a lot of good stuff.
It just started.
Yeah, and we had a lot more utility in terms of use of characters in Strange New Worlds than we did in Discovery's early seasons. Yeah,
they really thought about it with Strange New Worlds. They really sat and they said, "Who is this character? And let's build this into these storylines."
Yes. Mm-hmm. What would they do? Why are they doing it? Mm-hmm. And that was nice, as opposed to just focusing on like three or four. If you're going to have like an ensemble cast that way, then you really need to use the talents of your ensemble cast.
Mm-hmm.
But we have hit our half hour mark. So let us awkwardly transition to Star Trek Prodigy.
Hold on. I got to say one thing about Lower Decks before we let it go. Okay. This is a bit, I'm sorry. I cannot let this go. Okay. The three Texas class ships, the Alito, the Dallas,
Corpus Christi, and the Daedalus.
Yeah. A few years ago, they were doing new submarines for the U.S. Navy, and they were naming them after major cities. When it came time to commission a submarine for Corpus Christi, Texas, the Christian community came out overwhelmingly against a ship of war being named the Body of Christ, which is Corpus Christi.
Whoa.
So the submarine is actually called the USS City of Corpus Christi.
So, wait a minute. The same Christian community that is cool with literally all the ugly things that are happening in our nation right now.
Yeah. They came out very upset there about the idea of a submarine being called the Body of Christ.
Right now I'm smirking because I'm here for everything that Marie wants to say. I just want to hear her say it.
I'm just shaking.
Jermaine's like, I want her to be flamed.
I'm just like, you know what? Y'all already know what I'm thinking.
Just the fact that in our reality, in our real life, they would not allow a USS Corpus Christi. Yet here we get in Star Trek a ship of war, the USS Corpus Christi.
I'm going to fight you on that. I'm going to fight you on that before we get to Prodigy. I don't want to short Prodigy, but I'm going to fight you on that because I fundamentally disagree that Starfleet ships are inherently ships of war. I think they are ships of exploration that have the capability of defending themselves.
And now the Defiant is the only one that I know is a ship of war.
See, I don't personally think the Texas class is an exploration since nobody's on it.
So. I mean, that's valid. Yeah. That's valid, but generally speaking. Right.
What about the Crusades? Please, somebody, tell me something about the Crusades. I mean, that's all that the Crusades was.
Yeah,
it was, you know what I'm saying? We're not talking about it. I'm not talking about a ship, but what I'm saying is
like the actual
Christians
Crusades.
Do actual actually Crusades. Fight yeah. in the name of the okay. Lord. So what's the difference between...
It's just funny that you look back at world history and how big of a difference the 1860s were across the world, because not only do you have American Civil War, you have the unification of Germany, but you also have the unification of Italy because of the complete demise of the papal states.
Yes.
The Catholic Church used to control almost all of Italy until it all fell apart in the 1860s, and all they got left is that little chunk of Rome. And that... Mm-hmm. You know, now the Vatican City.
All I know is they're a bunch of fucking hypocrites. Like,
Always happen.
Like, I don't know how many Star Trek.
I mean, these are literally the same. I mean, these are literally the same folks who let's support our troops and send more of our boys over there. And I can get away with that because I'm Southern. Also a military spouse.
She's not wrong. She's not wrong.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's just it.
The people that are now saying, "Well, it's okay."
Also, I'm incredibly impressed that they knew what the words meant.
Stop!
I mean, Corpus Christi.
I'm gonna get so much.
You all can't see him, but he's drinking his water, y'all.
I'm all getting so much trouble. But yeah, I mean, you know, like most folks don't take Latin anymore.
Nope. The Catholics don't.
I mean, well, based well, so in
the Catholics take bad Latin, right? They take church Latin.
Okay, all right. I get it.
Okay,
I get
it. Well,
I'm sorry, Jermaine. I spoke over you. My bad. What were you saying?
No, I was saying, okay, I get it. I didn't realize it.
All right. Thank you for letting me muse on that point for a moment.
Yes, and now I'm going to get flamed by literally everyone. It's going to be amazing. I look forward to posting the best parts.
All right, Prodigy.
Yes. Jermaine, do you want to take Prodigy?
No.
No.
Oh, God. Episode 11, Season 1 of Prodigy, Asylum.
All right. I will do this briefly. All right. I will fall on this sword. Everybody pay attention.
Yeah, it's a really good episode today.
Yeah, isn't it, William? Isn't it?
It was great. I freaking loved it. Like, it was totally like, I mean, just to bring us back, it was like the season finale of the mid-season finale, and I'm here for
I'm gonna need you to calm down.
You're doing too much right now, Will. You're doing too much.
It was so good to see everyone again. I mean, check out that TNG.
Ladies and gentlemen, methinks he protests to have seen it too much.
I mean, look at that. I can't speak on his forehead, but look at that beautiful science/medical uniform he got right there.
That's really rumpled.
I do have a question. Is he like half Kardashian?
He looks. I won't say Kardashian.
He's in a next gen uniform with the futuristic combat we haven't seen.
Yeah,
right, exactly. And I was just like, okay.
And also, like, my dude, have you, uh-huh. I mean, didn't you get the memo? Like, the 24th century is wrinkle-free, motherfucker. Like, what are you doing? Have some pride.
All I gotta say is I like seeing the little pot belly that he has. I thought that was
I know, right? Like,
well,
this,
he himself
I mean,
pointed out that he went crazy years ago, so.
So, yeah. Anyway, so Asylum. It starts out with basically our kids trying to log some good deeds as they head toward the lone comm relay station in the Delta Quadrant, because they're like, yeah, we're going to show up and we really want to distract them from the fact that we stole their fancy ass ship. Now, remember that Wen's mind was wiped when she saw Zero, who's a Medusan. So she doesn't remember all the things that we remember the Diviner told her, mainly that the Protostar is host to a computer virus that will wipe out all of Starfleet. So they get to this station. They, you know, the umbilical goes out, and apparently the Protostar has a real fancy umbilical that's not actually physical
anymore.
It
was amazing. I mean, it was just like, oh, great. Now we're bringing back, we're totally bringing back, I would say Strange New Worlds, but really I saw Discovery do it first with the whole umbilical thing.
So anyway, so they walk across that. You're killing me, man.
You're trying way too hard and it's killing.
Y'all, Jermaine,
I gotta tell you, Gertrude, I'm gonna need you to dial that back a little. I'm gonna need you to dial that back.
So, William, you are standing right there on the precipice.
Come on, Gertrude. Gertie, stop. So anyway. They go across the umbilical, they get onto the relay station, and they're right. Like, is anybody here? And then, you know, Chubbs comes out and introduces himself and they're like, so we would like to apply for asylum. And he's like,
damn.
The fuck? And then he's like, all right, so we're going to scan you. And they basically send everybody, they basically send everybody through. And, like, you know, we find out that, you know, Rocktaki is actually a Brakkar. We find out that, you know, Jacob Pog's a Tellarite. And that he, and apparently he didn't know they were founding members of the Federation, which kind of blows my mind. Like, what is he doing in the Delta Quadrant, guys? Like, what is he doing? What was it
that he learned about Starfleet?
It should have been a Talaxian. He should have been a Talaxian, not a Tellarite.
I know, I know. And again, if they hadn't told me he was a Tellarite, I would never have known.
I mean, you know, they try to make Tellarites look different in every show of Star Trek. They look different every time.
So anyway, so that we find, and we also get a, we get a species for Murph.
He's
a slime worm of some description.
A melanoid slime worm.
Earth. Yes. With an F at the end. Earth.
Yes.
So that's Murph. And of course, like, we know Gwen goes through and she looks at the guy and she's like, "You're not going to find me." And he's like, "Well, you'd be surprised." And then she goes through and it's unregistered alien. Yeah. And she's like, "Yeah, uh-huh." And then they send Dal through, and Dal goes through, and basically there's a note saying that he needs to report directly to Starfleet headquarters. So they know something.
He's reporting to the office.
Right.
Do you think he was originally put on the ship?
I don't know.
Do you,
I don't know.
Do you think he's the weapon?
No. I think the Protostar is the weapon. You I think that's pretty clear. Is
the
weapon?
We saw it pretty clearly. It's the Protostar. Yeah.
It's pretty clearly. It was a slingshot. Anyway, Zero, who feels terrible and is still, like, dealing with all kinds of guilt for having, like, wiped Gwen's mind, takes her down into sickbay, is like, "Hey, this is a better sickbay than we have access to. Let's just go ahead and use it, and I know how we're going to do a simple procedure, and I'm going to fix your brain." And she's like, "Aces." And so she gets into the, gets onto the biobed. Meanwhile, Chubbs, back on the bridge, is downloading.
Please, no more Chubbs. No more Chubbs.
I cannot remember his name.
Did he even say a name?
He did. He did. And I cannot remember.
Oh, Barnes Rex. Denobulan Starfleet officer, Lieutenant Junior.
He's Denobulan. Oh.
Yeah, he's Denobulan.
Yes.
I mean,
he's a,
oh my
he's
God.
A bad Denobulan.
Does this mean Sebastian's coming out?
He's got wine. He's got the cheap wine. He's got the cheap wine, yeah. No, he doesn't.
No, no, we got, we, no, no.
He's
we
got champagne too.
We started with the cheap wine and we're going up. That's not the way you do it, sweetheart. You start with the good stuff and then you work your
way down. Okay.
Stella Rose. Stella Rose.
You know, because I'm continuing this. We got some Stella Rosa right here.
What's happening right now?
We got some Marlo right here.
I keep asking that, Jermaine. I never get an answer.
And we got
you
some
love us, Keith.
Peach yes, I do.
Bullshit right here, and we got just, the hard shit right here.
We just cursing today, huh? What's going?
Like, it's called Duce, and this is the hard stuff. Okay, okay. Like,
not of its name. Not of its name, Duce, because Duce means soft.
Or two.
It's cognac, okay? And I'm just gonna have, you know. So how about this?
For oh my God, Jermaine, moment, you have missed us. Don't even pretend.
So
don't even
for
pretend.
Every moment that I'm gonna bullshit my way through this, I'm gonna take a drink, okay?
There you go. You're like, no, no more, no more. No, Keith.
Oh
save
God.
Us.
We only got 15 minutes left. We're almost there, guys.
Okay. We only had a few Easter eggs in product.
So wait. I'm going to finish my summary. Oh, yeah. Anyway. Oh, we didn't even get into the summary, guys.
We never get through the summary.
I will if you let me.
Gameway. There.
So anyway, as I shamelessly abuse my power, and apparently I broke William. So basically, our Denobulan Lieutenant Junior Grade tries to download the ship's logs as per procedure, and he's going to transmit those to Starfleet. Well, the problem is, as soon as he downloads the logs, then the virus on the protostar infects the entire relay, and everything starts to break to the point that the weapon systems that are on the relay station start to fire at the relay station. And so everything's going to hell in a handbasket. The Nobelian, whose name again I cannot remember. I have a block on this guy.
Vardis Frex.
So Frex actually eventually runs into our kid crew and is like, "Saboteurs!" And they're like, "No? We're kids, bro.
You're only children."
So he actually runs up and takes the lone escape pod because that's the kind of person he is. And he ejects, and leaving all the children on board. So what they end up doing is, because apparently New Trek is obsessed with space jumping. Anybody else feel that? Because I'm like,
Yeah.
I'm like, we've done this a lot.
A lot.
All right, Kurtzman. I understand you like skydiving, my dude, but like, I'm going to need you to calm down and find something else to write about.
Just saying. You're a Sandra Bullock fan, but we don't need to remake that movie.
Right. So anyway, they end up like making Rock Talk calculate the vectors and jump, you know, just as the relay explodes. They end up sort of overshooting the mark, and then Janeway uses the tractor beam to pull them in. And right as they're pulling in, Gwen gets a vision and remembers what her father meant when he said, "It is a weapon." We flip to Admiral Janeway. Admiral Janeway and her ship have made it to Tars Lamora, and they're trying to figure out what the hell's going on. They get down on, they beam down to Tars Lamora, and they wander over, and they find the Diviner in stasis. And apparently he's managed to get dressed, so good for him.
He put on his big boy pants.
He did, before going into stasis, because y'all remember, he was shirtless, writhing on the ground when we last left him. But now he looks infinitely more put together.
Good writing.
So, yeah. So they are going to revive the Diviner, and we're going to find out what happens from there. And that's the summary.
Easter eggs.
Yeah, Easter eggs. I got one Easter egg. Admiral Janeway, it's so good to see you again, girl.
Yep. They christened the protostar in the same way they christened the Enterprise B in the beginning of Star Trek Generations, except it wasn't a bottle of Dom Perignon that they used. Mm-mm. It was some sort of red wine. We didn't get to see the label.
So. Yeah, I know. I mean, but in my heart, it's Chateau Picard.
I hate y'all.
Seems fitting.
So much.
Well, no, you don't.
Let me revise that. I hate William so much.
Sorry, Dad.
Vardis Frex.
This is going in a weird way.
He's like, "No, Sebastian's coming. Hurry up.
All right, I'm sorry, Keith. It was my fault.
Vardis Frex is of course a Denobulan. We saw Denobulan last in Mugatu Gamato in season 2 of Lower Decks, and then previous to that in Enterprise. He references two worse places to go other than his far-off station, that being the Gamma Quadrant or Nimbus 3, our favorite
Everybody remembers
planet Nimbus of galactic peace.
To peace. Star Trek 5, baby!
I know, finally something positive about it.
No.
Still no.
No.
Jermaine, stop giving me that disapproved look. I can't stand you. I'm doing my best, okay?
And of course, when he mentions the Melanoid...
Keep drinking, worm, Sebastian.
He also references the Horda. Mm-hmm. One quick thing about...
Devil in the Dark.
Rock Talk, the Brickar. She is voiced by... Mm-hmm. A voice actress's name is Riley Alice Rocky. She is actually a young girl, and her father is voice actor Carlos Alice Rocky, who we also heard tonight as Admiral Brian Amigo on Lower Decks.
Oh, they're keeping it in the family.
Indeed.
Star Trek is very incestuous.
Yeah. And of course, trying to figure out what species Del is, he either says Sicari or Talaxian.
Mm-hmm. And there's no way he's Talaxian, y'all.
No.
Talaxians don't have tails.
They really don't.
When after finding out that the Tellarites were founders of the Federation, Jenkinpog tries to claim that he is royalty. He starts eating the Earth food hot dogs, which he says is food fit for a king. Now, for those who don't know their deep cut history references like I do, when FDR first welcomed King George VI and his wife, Queen Elizabeth, to the White House, they served him hot dogs.
Yeah. You know, deep throating hot dogs isn't that far from what kings used to do.
Yeah!
That would be King Edward II, yes.
We nip that in the bud. We nip that in the bud. I'm so proud of us.
Now, one other reference that I caught that may have been, I thought was a reference, when they were flying towards the protostar, Jenkinpog starts going, gonna make it. Mm-hmm. That's what I say every time I think I'm just gonna barely make a green light. But I also consider a reference to Steve Martin in the Cowboys and the Amigos. I'm trying to be impressive.
You just broke your main. 10 points to Shovelin.
William is gone. It's Sebastian.
Every time black folks laugh, they relocate.
I mean, I'm a little afraid for like Jermaine's house. I'm not going to lie. I was like, is that door? Is that chair going to go with the door? All right. Also, I do actually think that the intro was meant to be a little bit of a reference to Star Trek Into Darkness as well.
As well as Voyage Home.
And Voyage Home.
I'm actually getting hot.
Are you, dear?
No, I really think it's... I'm gonna have some more.
All right, so those are the Easter eggs. Let's talk a little bit about what we think is gonna happen here. Like, my money is on Janeway picking up the escape pod with, you know, Vrex inside it. And Vrex is going to be like, they're saboteurs and they're the worst.
Oh, definitely.
This is also going to be fed by the diviner who's going to talk about, you know, traitors and traitor's daughter and blah, 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 blah.
Absolutely.
I was not expecting John Noble to come back this season.
Technically, we're in season one still.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the only Star Trek show that's allowed to have more than 14 episodes in a season.
Which is honestly peculiar, because I would have thought that because it's 3D animation would have cost more to make versus Lower Decks, which is a combination of 2D and 3D animations. Why do you think that they decided to give this a double doozy and make it a full-fledged season like they did in the 90s?
Nickelodeon money.
The Hagemans. They
Wait. If it's Nickelodeon money, then who owns it? Paramount or
well, Nickelodeon is owned by Paramount.
Yes.
Then what's the problem? Shit, you made up right. 20 episodes too.
But it's the difference is you got the Hagemans who already been working with Nickelodeon for years. They wanted this many episodes to be able to tell a complete story in one season.
Yeah.
And Nickelodeon. Because they're airing the episodes on Nickelodeon as well. Yes. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit more money going into it.
Yes. Because Nickelodeon still exists. I mean, even though it's owned by Paramount, it still exists as its own entity, and so it has its own revenue streams.
Of course. It is technically a kid show, so you know.
While it's a kid show, I think it's really interesting, and I really like what they do with this show, because they never assume that kids are less sophisticated as an audience.
I like it because it plays on both worlds. It caters to both kids and audience. It's like if you were watching Shrek, you would understand it as an adult.
There are so many dirty jokes in Shrek.
Exactly.
So many.
If you were watching
Ice Age. Let's be overcompensating for something.
What about Ice Age? Ice Age is a good one.
Yeah.
Yes.
But even beyond that, though, I mean, we know the target audience is children. Yeah. They never sugarcoat anything. Like, there's a lot of horror wrapped up in the episode where Rock Talk is alone for what is virtually a century. It's horrific and it's scary, and they don't shy away from that.
That's a long time.
They let because you know children know. Like, one of the only things that I have learned thus far as a parent is that children know when you're bullshitting them. Yeah, and they don't have like the same tolerance for it that we as adults do, right? Like, is an adult's gonna let you, like, maybe there's a point to this, we're gonna wait this out? A kid's gonna be like, yeah, no, dog, we're done.
Yeah.
And I think they really are in tune with that. And so we have what is a really complex, solid storyline for kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the things that happen to Doll are awful. Just y'all, terrible. It's awful.
Absolutely. Crazy. I couldn't believe it when I saw it, or lack thereof.
You mean the rest of the season? This is not an episode-specific thing. Oh,
I think we've established that by now. I'm very good at predicting the rest of the season.
Right. So that's one of the things that I really, like, again, really love about Prodigy, is that it is a legitimate story that's told in a very honest way.
Just interesting to note that we forgot the very first episode of Prodigy almost exactly a year ago. The week after the season, for the finale of season 2 of Lower Decks, first started Prodigy. And we haven't had an episode since early February. So we went from, kind of sputtered through, mixed with Discovery, and it ended. We got Picard, we got Strange New World, then we got a break. And Lower Decks came back.
So what's happening now is Marie said something a few months ago that we're pretty much in this renaissance period of Trek.
Oh, definitely.
And so basically, since we're in season 4 of Discovery, so we can expect at least for the next 3 years, probably the next 7 years, since we got 2 more Star Trek shows in the works, a complete rotation of new Star Trek shows every week. So pretty much, we are going to be booked up for the next 7 to 10 years, y'all, and I'm here for it.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. On my previous podcast, I had on the guys from Mission Log just after they started announcing all these new Trek shows, and about how do you guys deal with the fact that when you started this, you had seemingly an end date. Now that end date has just been kicked decades into the future.
I'm here for it.
I'm here for it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's better than waiting 30 years, you know. Yeah. Well, aside from, Enterprise. But, like, it's better than waiting so long. Like, can you imagine?
I am thrilled. I am thrilled because this is something I'm going to be able to share with my kids. And I can think of no more important message that we can send to future generations and to ourselves than the message of hope that's at the heart of Star Trek as a franchise.
Yes. Yes, it's
because
it's
there's good. Like at the heart of it is this idea that even if we don't always get it right, even if we stumble and fall and screw up, we are going to stand up and keep trying to be the best versions of ourselves.
I love it when Marie gets into her whole debacle of motivational speeches. I know, right? I used that part in the promo. It was great.
I know, but I truly believe that. And I think that's what has kept me coming back to Trek for 40 years now. I can think of no other franchise that has hope as its heart.
Yep. There might be a hope in the title, but there is no hope in the franchise. Because
thank you, Sebastian.
The Rebels keep getting their asses kicked every movie and every show. But they become triumphant in the very end somehow. You know, that's Star Wars, though. As long as we stay ahead of Star Wars, I'm here for it.
And we're never going to stay ahead of Star Wars. Yeah. I'm going to need like Paramount Plus to start like its swag, like it's start licensing good stuff to come out.
Oh, the toys that are coming out now. I got my brand new Playmates Saru doll. I got.
Do you?
Yep. I got my Miss Saru. I've got an Amigo Saru, I've got a Playmate Saru, and then I've got the Funko Pop Saru.
Damn.
There's soon going to be Nerf a phaser rifle. They are actually coming out with a Nerf phaser rifle and a Nerf handheld phaser from Next Generation.
I gotta tell you, that's not where I was gonna go with that, but also that's going on pre-order like now.
Yep.
And I'm not giving it to the boys. It's
they announced this stuff back on Star Trek Day, some of the things that are coming out. We haven't had good Star Trek toys since Berman Trek, and we're getting some new ones now, finally.
Yeah.
Like they were going getting ready to come out with, when Discovery launched, they were going to have a Discovery tricorder and phaser, but then they ended up pulling the contract on it right before release.
Oh.
So the only ones made, you can get them for like $300 because they only made a couple of them.
Poodoo. Yeah.
And I got to tell you, if I got $300, I'm going to spend it on a podcast setup.
That's fair.
Yep.
All right, guys, we have hit the hour mark. Do we have any final thoughts on where we're going to see
Prodigy go? I can't wait for next week's episode of Prodigy. It's going to be great.
I'm actually surprised Gwen has already regained her memories. I was thinking they were going to milk that for at least two or three more episodes.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? But also, right. I can sort of see it being necessary. Kind of. Because they've got it. They have to have somebody know that the virus is on board in order to create the tension with Janeway's ship following.
Well, we know Akana is coming. Billy Campbell is returning to Star Trek as
the song. So excited. Yeah.
And there's going to be a nice act moment where they do meet up with Janeway. Mm-hmm. And they can't open communications because it will launch the virus. So,
tin cans, yeah. Y'all. Tin cans on a string.
Yep. Lots of good things coming.
Jermaine, you have any thoughts?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm just listening. Why?
William.
Why are we showing this?
William.
Marie, wait. Are your eyes hazel?
They are not. They are not. My eyes are actually really strange. They are colorless in the center with a blue ring around them.
Gray?
Mm-hmm. Almost.
Wow. For the longest, I thought your eyes were blue.
They show up that sometimes, but yeah, no, they are pretty colorless in the center.
Okay.
Right. To the point that my new doctor actually stopped me and was like, has anybody talked to you about your eyes? And I was like, what's going on with my eyes? what's going on? This is not the sort of thing you expect to hear on a physical, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, it's fine. They're just very unusual. And I'm like, maybe okay. Lead with that. Maybe lead with that. All right, so Keith, we've heard from you. William, we've heard from you. I have talked my head off, so everybody's tired of my voice. Thank you to the three viewers who stuck with us. I certainly hope to see you next week, where we're going to continue with Prodigy.
Yes.
And figuring out what Dal is.
Okay.
All right.
And so who's up? And hoping what Starfleet has in store for him is not bad.
Well, next
right, episode, which is becoming a real question.
Let sleeping Borg lie.
Because that's a thing that we all need to think about.
As right a there. Thing that we all need to think about.
All right. I'm going to save us all from Sebastian and roll that beautiful bean footage. Bye, guys.
Now again, I'm gonna say this again because we're near the end of our show. If you are our allies, we are not talking to you. We are not. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm not gonna ever say it on the internet.
I'm sorry. Wait. There was a shadow of a church.
Okay. What?
William has questionable ideas about what he puts. William has questionable ideas about what he puts on the internet.
Oh, I remember that episode. Uh-huh. I remember that episode. Yeah.
Wait.
We put out an audio version of the podcast.